We will call the meeting to order, and I will ask Secretary West to do the roll call, please.
Chair Bell.
Present.
Regent Hall. Regent Brinkley.
Present.
Regent Roddy.
Present.
Regent Dennison.
Present.
Vice Chair Milliken.
Present.
Regent Nichols.
Present.
Regent Spiller.
Present.
Regent Thomas.
Present.
Secretary West, present, and Regent Warfel.
Present.
Okay, Mr. Chair, we have 10 regents present representing form of four.
Good, thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is approval of our minutes from the first quarterly meeting on March 3rd. All had access to that recently. So I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
Motion by Regent Roddy.
Second.
Second by Regent Thomas. Any discussion, corrections, deletions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. We'll move directly into the Academic Affairs Committee, and I'll ask Regent Milliken to take that over.
Thank you, Chair Bell. We have 9 action items on the Academic Affairs Committee, and I'd ask the provost, well, he already came around. Got there ahead of me. Action item number 1 is the approval of a graduate certificate in enterprise management through the Gordon Ford College of Business interdisciplinary program within the Gordon Ford College of Business.
So what I will just say is we talked about them previously, but I want to talk a little bit about certificates, especially the ones in the Gordon Ford College of Business. Those are stackable, so they stand alone as well as are part of what would be the majors. So a person has an opportunity to take the certificate outside of the major, get interested and become part of the major and have it count. So it's the wave of the future in higher education as we speak, and that covers 3/4 of the list as we look.
Any other comments, questions? If not, I'd entertain a motion to establish a graduate certificate in enterprise management with implementation in the fall of 2023. I have such a motion.
Second.
Motion by Thomas, second by
second.
Regent Nichols. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. The second action item is the approval of a graduate certificate in executive decision making through the Gordon Ford College of Business interdisciplinary program within the Gordon Ford College of Business.
It applies to all, the same things all apply to this one.
Any questions or comments concerning this? If not, I'd entertain a motion to establish a graduate certificate in executive decision making with implementation again in the fall of 2023. Motion by Van West. Did you get the second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries. Action item number 3 is the approval of an undergraduate certificate in sales through the Department of Marketing within the Gordon Ford College of Business.
And sales is one of the hottest areas as we speak now, and people are looking for the opportunity to get information or learn how sales, and this is also associated with being able to use for the degree.
Any questions or comments in regard to this action item? If not, I would request a motion to establish an undergraduate certificate in sales with implementation in the fall of 2023.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Brody.
Shane.
I'm sorry. I'm going to let you take care of this, Beth. You're doing better than I am.
I got it.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Action item number four, approval of an undergraduate certificate in executive influence and organization through the Department of Management within the Gordon Ford College of Business.
It's a certificate that deals with what would be decision-making at all levels, and it is important related to management, and I think will be taken by other people within the Gordon Ford College of Business.
I would entertain then a motion to establish an undergraduate certificate in executive influence and organizations with implementation in the fall of 2023.
So moved. Second.
Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Action item number five, the approval of an undergraduate certificate in management inclusive organizations through the Department of Management within the Gordon Ford College of Business.
Decision-making skills are associated with the certificate in integrating inclusivity in management for preparing you for your career. So, incredibly important in this day and age.
Any further discussion or questions? If not, I'd entertain a motion to establish an undergraduate certificate in managing inclusive organizations with implementation in the fall of 2023. Have a motion, a second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Action item number six, the approval of an undergraduate certificate in creative and innovation management through the Department of Management with Gordon Ford College of Business.
It's associated with creativity and innovation in management and is there to provide students and other individuals who take this with opportunities to identify and do problem solving and critical thinking.
Have any questions or comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to establish an undergraduate certificate in creative and innovation management with implementation in the fall of 2023.
Second.
Have a motion second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Action item number seven, the approval for academic program suspension for the following programs: Folk Studies, Master of Arts.
It was a program on the books. It's been here for a significant period of time, but we're at a point where the enrollment has been low. The faculty decided to close it, and one of the reasons they decided to close it is that there was a lack. They had lost two people, and at this point, there was no way to add two more people to the faculty.
Do we have any other questions or comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion to suspend Folk Studies, Masters of Arts, with implementation in the spring of 2023.
So moved.
Have a motion and second. Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion carries. Action item number eight is the approval for academic program suspension for the program Agriculture Bachelor of Science 605.
So this is one that we have all got calls on wanting to know if we were getting rid of agriculture. We are not getting rid of agriculture. We are just cleaning up the books at this point. We have, for some unknown reason that I still can't figure out, we have two of the same, I'll take that back, two of very closely the same ag degrees. The only difference is one expects there to be a minor and the other one does not. It will affect nobody. They will still be able to take the minor. We're just going to move them all into an ag, one ag instead of these two ag programs.
We've discussed this previously. Any other questions or comments concerning this? If not, I would like to receive a motion to suspend in agriculture the Bachelor of Science 605 to be implemented in the fall of 2023.
So moved.
Have a motion, a second?
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The motion carries. Action item number 9 is an approval of emeritus status. Would you address that for us, please?
I will. Dr. Paquin could not be here today. Just to remind you, he joined WKU as assistant professor in 2004 and retired in December of 2022. While he was here, he made huge efforts in bringing cross-cultural awareness to the WK students, faculty, and staff, both through his teaching, both through his study abroad, as well as some certificates that he earned from areas. In addition, he was awarded the Joseph P. Craig Kanjum Award for Excellence in Leadership in Psychology Education and was nominated for the College of Education and Behavioral Sciences Faculty Excellence in Teaching Award in 2008, 11, and 17. Well deserved.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I would like a motion for approval of emeritus status to be awarded to Dr. Anthony Paquin.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by
Regent.
Okay, you all got
those two. That's two.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Before we leave this, I want to take the opportunity just to ask Bud's opinion. I know when I first came on board 10 years ago, it was really rare to have a certificate program. And with the renewed interest or whatever in certificates, badges, micro-credentials, is this something that we're likely to see more of?
So we were talking yesterday, the deans and I, it's a great question, and I think so. I mean, we were talking, what seems to have been lost in this whole conversation are minors. Minors aren't what people are looking for anymore. What they're looking for is certificates, but they're really looking for certificates that are stackable. They want to have that opportunity to have lots of on-ramps and off-ramps that get you associated with degrees or associated with institutions so that at some point they can make the leap to get a degree. And that's really what we will see. And at the other end of the spectrum is badges. We've talked about badges. Gordon Ford does some badges, but we have talked about expanding it to students as well as to the public. So we are headed in that direction. And I think it's the wave of the future, so I think we have to continue to move in that direction. And that was our conversation with the Dean Chester.
It would seem to me that it would be really important for us to be able to demonstrate competencies on whatever these things are, because that's really what employers are going to be looking for, I guess.
And what they're willing to send their people back to universities to do.
It's interesting when you think about curricular reform. We used to think about, a long time ago, 130, 140 hours. We got that down to 120. But now the conversation is around how do you modularize that in such a way that you can break it up into 15 or 30 credit hour chunks, for lack of a better word, that stack. And that stack in such a way that you're not locked in to a particular major at the beginning. Right, so you can do the first 30 hours, and you can bring the first 30 hours with you. If you stack on top of that, you can shift from this degree to this degree. It gets harder as you get over 60 hours or 90 hours, get kind of locked in. But then you think about graduate school as well. For when I went through, it was a 36-hour program. Now you can do 12 here, 12 here, 12 here, and when you put it all together, it builds into a master's degree. So you don't have to do it all at once. There is a credential that comes at the end of each one of those. And so when you finish, you have three credentials and a master's degree. And even more flexible, you might be able to do one credential online completely, do one credential over the course of a year in person, might be able to do one credential over several months during the summer. And so you think about how our education classes work, how our graduate courses in business work. It's it's all pressing toward flexibility, stackability, and modularization.
Right. Yeah, I think we're headed that way. I don't think the future institutions will be around if they can't figure out a way to go in that direction.
It's a matter of people don't have the time.
Yeah.
They want it. I want information that I can use, but I don't have the time. So you're going to tell me I can get a master's 2 years from now? I'm not going to talk to you. You told me I can get a certificate in 3 months, 6 months? Okay, now I'm willing to talk to you because you can give me something that I can use that gives me a credential at the end of it. But it is a time management issue that we're going to have to deal with. And as Dr. Pomponi said, the flexibility of how do you want it? You want to do it online? You want to come into class? You want to do a hybrid? All of those things are going to be critical to the future learner.
Very good. And we have an information item.
We do. I would love to ask Dr. Jason Crandall and Dr. Mark Schaefer to come up and get them ready. Dr. Crandall and Dr. Schaefer are both in the School of Kinesiology, Recreation, and Sport. They're here today to talk to you about how they have created a business, which is great. And it's bingo size, impactful applied research, and engaging communities and students. And I'd love for them to get to go forward.
I'll add one thing. And some of you may have heard or learned about bingo size during the past decade or so. But I think what is important to me in this is, number one, the connection to the innovation campus. But number two, COVID was not good for anyone except maybe bingo size. They've emerged on the other they emerged on the other side of what was a tremendous challenge, but had a solution to that challenge. And so I think it's a great story.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing us to be here today. I'm going to try to condense 12 years of work in about 15 minutes. I'll do my best. I think the biggest thing I'd like you to take away today is really this symbiotic relationship between engaging the community, applied research, and then innovation and commercialization that can come from that. And it's a cycle that continues to feed itself. Whoops. So it all started 12 years ago as a simple service learning project for some students. I wanted them to get them out in the community doing some things with older adults. And I told them to create an exercise program that failed miserably. And it was because everyone was down the hall playing bingo. So it hit me right then and there, bingo size, let's see if that works. The next week we had 15 people show up. So we collected some data on that particular project. And as time went by, I continued to use that service learning model when I came here to WKU. And so since then, 2013, over 600 WKU students have participated in this service learning activity. So they go out into the community and they actually do bingo size for all of these different types of places. So the students have done a lot of good. They're getting a lot of great experience doing the program because we know older adult care is a real issue right now. And so we need to be training and preparing our students to go out and work with that population. So that brings us to the applied research part. So obviously I was collecting data while we were doing these particular projects. And all along the way, we needed an entity to kind of house our research. And so that's exactly what we did. I'm gonna let Dr. Schaefer talk a little bit about Cashin.
Thank you. My name is Mark Schaefer. I'm pleased to have the opportunity to be the research fellow for Cashin. Cashin was developed and co-founded by Dr. Crandall and Dr. Shake. And where I come in, is that the dream is this data set. There is a lot of data of programs implemented around the country and throughout the world that I can continue to process to bolster the research arm of bingo size. Currently speaking, we're working on some data from Virginia, specifically a program implementation, and the results are extremely favorable. The statistics and all the things that we enjoy looking at is part of building that research arm of bingo size. And what's interesting about it is how multidisciplinary it is. We're working with students and faculty across the university. We got psychological sciences, physical therapy, speech language pathology, public health. All of our students and the faculty throughout the university get to be involved in this as well, because there's different components, as Dr. Crandall will continue to elucidate, about the program that bring in interventions for older population, the older population to be able to have fall risk interventions and health and well-being. So the research side of it will hopefully continue to bolster about what I'm going to hand this right back over to Dr. Graham for, is the next stage of grants and funding to continue to perpetuate the program. There's our timer right there. I'm just telling you that. Yeah.
So from this research, we've been able to be very successful securing external funding for research and programmatic activities. So all of these different funding agencies, including the NIH, have funded us. And the great thing about that research is it's all applied research with students involved. So you can see there's a lot of students that have gone on trips across Tennessee, Kentucky, other places. We all had a great time. Dr. Shake has been my colleague and partner from the very beginning, a fantastic researcher, and I really appreciate all his help. So that's a great part of it. And of course, we get the publications. This is where the evidence base comes from, and that's critical to continue, as Dr. Schaefer mentioned, continuing to get that data, continuing to publish, continuing to show that the program works. This is critical. This is a critical endorsement from the United States government. It's called the Administration for Community Living, which means that these organizations can use government funding to purchase bingo size. We also have approval from USDA as an obesity prevention program. Again, more funding can come in that way. And so from all of that research, all of those approvals, that's where the commercialization piece came in. And so since that happened, since those approvals happened, we've really grown the program. So now we have multiple workshops. We focus on fall prevention education. We focus on nutrition education. We even have current funding from the Center for Disease Control to create a COVID-19 vaccine education workshop. So we're currently implementing that across Kentucky right now. We even have it in different languages. We have a lot of folks out in California, so we have to have Spanish. And we even have Polish, which I know is kind of random. We have it in Polish because they love bingo size in Poland. So I think one of the really major things about bingo size is we can implement it across what I call the spectrum of care. So all the way from senior centers all the way down to the nursing homes. We've implemented bingo size for over 8,900 residents in nursing homes, mostly across the South, but we continue to move west as well. So we even have items that we sell. So they all have bingo size themes on them, right? And so these are actually, we call them curriculum reinforcements. So these go along with the program. So we're trying to reinforce the nutrition information. We're trying to reinforce the fall prevention education. So we've got things like my favorite, like toilet bowl lights, which are the most popular item. So we sell a lot of those. And so now we are in 47 states, soon to be 48. We're in even Alaska. We've got a lot of customers in Alaska. They love bingo size in Alaska. So we're a lot across the United States. We have a nationwide bingo size facilitator network. And we're in other parts of the world. These are occupational therapy students in the Philippines, which I don't know how they found out about bingo size, but they did. This is in the UK. This is in England. And this is some pictures from Poland. So these are some Polish older adults actually doing bingo size. I've been invited a couple times as a visiting lecturer to Poland. So this is the class that I was lecturing to. It's a group of physiotherapy students. They call it physiotherapy in Europe. And this is an actual nursing home that I visited to talk about bingo size in Poland. So it all has kind of come full circle, right? So we've got this innovation, we've got commercialization. Now we're taking a giant step forward with the help of the Innovation Campus to actually create a for-profit company. So that company will actually be owned 100% by the WKU Research Foundation, and I will be the CEO of the company. And so we're hoping that next step will really grow be able to grow the program even more than it is, and to really help to spur economic development here in Bowling Green and other places as well. So, right back to that community engagement piece. So I want to show this as an example of what bingo size can do. This is actually a video created by a group of older adults in New York, I believe. And I'm having a contest. a nationwide contest for the best bingo size video, right? So the winner gets bingo size merchandise. So this is one of the best entries that I've seen so far. So here we go. Hopefully it'll start.
Bingo size has helped me feel great. Bingo size has helped me feel healthy.
Bingo size has helped me be aware.
Something that I learned from, and it really made me appreciate working with older adults. And so, thank you. Oops. Thank you very much again for allowing us to be here. I have a lot of people to thank, you know, even all the way back from my undergraduate days here, way back in the early 90s. To everybody here, Dr. Dean Bosta, I really appreciate all of your support. I appreciate all the support you guys have given Bingo Size. The Innovation Canvas is amazing. I'm really excited about that. I'm excited about the opportunity. So thank you. Thank you once again.
One of the first things I remember about this was in 2017 when I first arrived. You all, one of the first research groups that I met with, and I remember looking at these big plastic tubs in your offices of stuff and thinking, you're not going to grow that into a business with those tubs. And so relocation of the Innovation Campus, the partnership with the folks over there, and the ability to bring that to scale, I think is a tremendous, tremendous exciting thing. And so you see another faculty member who had an idea, who's done real research, who has value that is not just research value, but monetary value in a company. And so we have another faculty member slash CEO in the making. So it's really exciting.
As someone who takes care of people in long-term care facility on a regular basis, that data on falls, if you can produce data that reduces falls, that's huge.
I wasn't allowed to talk about the statistics for this particular meeting, but our most recent study is there is a fall reduction, fear of falling, and then there's a reduction of fall interference and how that might interfere with their life. And this is after a 10-week implementation, 45 minutes twice a week. And this is throughout three years of data collection across the state of Virginia. So yeah. I thought that was a perfect time to bring
this. You did say toilet bowl light.
I did. I have one just because it's
fascinating, and I can see how that might help reduce falls.
It's very helpful. You put it on the rim, and then it, you walk in, it's motion sensor, so it lights up the water, so you don't
turn the light on.
It's genius.
Wow. Do we have any other questions?
It's good stuff.
Well, thank you, Dr. Crandall and Dr. Schaefer. We certainly appreciate your presentation. Very informative. Appreciate your being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Chair Bale, I think that concludes the business of the academic affairs today.
Finance and budget will have a hard time topping that. No less important. So,
not nearly as exciting.
Chair West, I will ask you.
We have our first action item is the statement of revenues and expenditures for the period ending for March 31st, 2023. So, Jeff, do you mind bringing up the slide deck? So anyway, as far as that report, there's been no changes since the April meeting. It was a good third quarter report, so no changes on that, so really nothing else yet. Any questions or discussion on this? And I look for a motion to accept the statement of revenues and expenditures for 9 months ended March 31st, 2023 and 2022.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The next item that we have is action item two, and that is personnel actions. So there were no comments or questions in the April meeting. We have not changed since then. The only thing that I'll remind the board is that that report only went through February. The March changes will be on the fourth quarter statement. Okay, do we have any questions for Susan on this? Comments? Then I will look for a motion to approve the faculty and staff personnel actions.
So moved.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes.
Bridget West, if I may, just a brief reminder to the board that the vote that you just took granted tenure to 27 faculty members. You'll recall I said we were going to celebrate that and call it out. I just wanted to highlight that for you all. An important decision in the lives of those faculty and the life of the institution. At the retreat in August, we'll bring information to you about who these folks are and their academic record. And then in August, all of them will get invited over to the president's home with a partner, a spouse, a guest. And we'll celebrate them at the outset of the fall semester. But I just wanted to make sure we paused and were mindful of the decision that we just made. Thank you.
We move on to now to action item number three, which is a resolution for the authorization issuance and sale of general receipts refunding.
So this was the two action items relating to bond refinancing that we wanted some additional language put into the actual resolution. So just as a reminder, over on the left side, that's what you saw at the April meeting. We have since worked with our financial advisor and legal to add these specific languages to the actual resolution. Which, Curry, I know that some of this was your concern, and I think these will cover anything that there were concerns over. Just actually insert the language into the actual resolution. So it says that the resolution shall remain effective for a one-year period beginning the date of the approved resolution. So should it be approved today, it would start today for a year. Any refunding, this is really important, must produce a net present value savings of a minimum of 5%. And then if the obligations are not issued by the university within that 1 year of the date of adoption of the resolution, the obligation must be reauthorized by the board.
Susan, was this for also action item number four as well?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so we want to vote on both of these together. Which I think we can do that. Okay. All right, action item number four, just as a reminder, was basically the same resolution, but it was a different series of bonds. It was 2023B, and action item three was 2023A. Okay. So do I have a motion to approve accept the resolution providing for the authorization, issuance, and sale of general receipts, refunding obligations in an aggregate principal amount of $22,900,000 for action item three, and then in the amount of approximately $19,500,000 for action item number four.
So moved.
Second.
Okay.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, both motions pass. All right, and now we move on to action item number 5. This is a request for approval for the initiation of various capital projects to preserve, modernize, maintain the facilities listed. And Ron Russell went through that at the April meeting. It's not changed since since it was reviewed in April, so we'll take any questions. Or Ron is here certainly to answer any. Any questions for Susan or Brian? Anybody have any comments? Hearing none, then I will ask for a motion to approve the initiation of the various capital projects.
So moved.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes. Now, we are going to pull action item number 6 for, I think, is President Cavone, are you going to discuss the change?
Yeah, I would like the board to consider a revision to SB 6. A small edit, but an important one. As you go through the legislative process, ensuring that your requests are not out of line with peer or other institutions is important. And I got the sense in a set of recent conversations yesterday that we had an opportunity to think a little bit differently about the academic complex project. And so what I would like for the board to consider, take a look at that building right over there. Putting $90 million into it doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense if we were able to get a replacement for the building. And so as we go through that process, I would like you all please to consider a changing renovate to replace academic complex. The amount in the, from $90 to $160 million, and the general fund amount changes also to $160 million. I think that if you have an opportunity to do this kind of project, you take it. And I think that you may have a shot. Surprise, Tanya.
Thank you.
There has to be a motion for the amendment.
Yeah.
Parts.
Okay. Is this quoted in the whole thing before?
Yeah.
I make a motion for the accept the amendment.
Okay. Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Oh, now we have accepted the amendment as proposed by President Cavone, and so now I need a motion to approve FB6, the 6-year capital plan.
So moved.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes. And I think that is all of our action items, but we do have an item on the budget development.
I don't know why I always have to follow things like bingo size and student. Anyway, that's the way it is. So first off, I want to say we're close to being completed with the budget. There's still a few little fine tuning of items to do, but I really wanted to thank the provost and the deans, their unit, their budget managers, and all the folks at the university. Everybody's worked really hard to, this is the second year of really having RAMP in place, and I think it's going well. Our Axiom, our budgeting tool, is maturing. Everybody's feeling more comfortable with it. I also want to say thank you to Brian Denning, our budget director, and Ronaldo, who is on vacation this week, for their leadership and guidance on this, because I couldn't do this on my own. So thank you, Brian. And So we'll keep this as informal as you like and keep it at a high level at the same time. But feel free to stop me if you have any questions as we move through this. So first, let me see if you say if you get a chance to go to the top of the hill, you'll see it doesn't quite look like this yet, but it's going to be there after we get some trees in place and some flowers. And thank you to Brian Russell and his team for the a lot of last minute work they did on that. So that's our cover for this budget go around. So I'll just go through a quick executive summary and then move into some revenue highlights, expenditure highlights, and then some of the final steps we have before you make your final approval at the June board meeting. So these are our high level budget priorities for fiscal year 24. As always, keeping college affordable for our students, keeping our eye on that first and foremost. Commitment to faculty and staff compensation by putting in place a salary increase pool. A strategic initiative fund that will allow leadership, primarily the president and provost, to fund strategic priorities across campus, primarily on the academic side of the university. An example of this is funding underrepresented minority hires for the university. And then, as we did, I know we're all anxious for inflation to get back under control, but we are going to continue monthly monitoring of inflationary costs across the university. So this is what the budget summary looks like. For fiscal year 24. Again, I don't expect the numbers to change much between now and June, but they could change slightly. So our budget for fiscal year 24 is approaching $390 million, and that's about a $6.5 million increase over the prior year, or 2%. And a reminder to the board of the budget governance structure that we've had in place since we moved to the RAM model. So you'll see that the BEC is in the kind of the middle of all of the input into the budget cycle, and that's a very broad representation of campus on the BEC. All the deans are on there, the vice presidents are on there, faculty, staff, and students. And so input into the BEC would be through the Staff Senate, the Faculty Senate, the CAC, which is our Capital Allocation Committee, the Support Unit Leadership, which is our Vice Presidents, and the SGA. And then once the BEC takes all the input from those groups, they make recommendations up to campus leadership. So these were the recommendations that that came out of campus leadership that comes to you as our board, as overall recommendations for this budget. So number one, as we did in the current fiscal year, just the continuation of monitoring fixed cost increases from inflation and using one-time funds to cover those overages. A 2% salary pool that will be distributed January of 24. And the decision on how that pool we distributed has not been made yet. The BEC will work on that over the summer and then make a recommendation to leadership. So I would expect that to be somewhere in the September-October timeframe. And that strategic initiative fund that I talked about, consideration to using some of those funds towards funding some of the high priority items that came out of the BEC recommendation. So any questions or comments on the executive summary at this point? Okay. On the revenue, you can see we are a tuition-dependent school. That makes up approximately 48% of our budget on the revenue side, followed by state appropriation, and then you'll see the other sources of funds, restricted funds. Just a reminder, that's pretty much our grants and contracts and federal and state financial aid. A graph I added, which I think is really interesting, and I talk about over the years. So you'll see back in the year 2000, We were a state-supported institution through appropriation. And over the years, that's almost completely flip-flopped from where back in 2021, state appropriation was 41%, tuition was 25%. Now, tuition is 46% and appropriation is 21%. So. So going back to us being a tuition-dependent school, these numbers are critical to how we budget on the revenue side. So we budget based on FTE, that's full-time equivalent, not headcount, because headcount includes every type of student. It would be counting me if I went and took a course on campus. It would count our dual credit students, students who do not pay full tuition. So we budget on FTE, and the FTE that we're projecting for the 24 year is 13,000, approximately 500. But as far as headcount, we are a campus approaching 17,000. The first time, first year students that we're using, or our freshman class for 24, is 2832, which is an increase over the current year. This year, our freshman class was around 2750. And I'll ask Ethan to keep me honest. And we're also requesting the board to approve a 3% tuition increase. And the CPE set our tuition increase cap at 5% over a two-year period, not to exceed 3% in either of the 2 years. This is what our state appropriation looks like at this moment in time. CPE will not approve the actual performance funding allocation until probably mid to late June. So we're going to build this budget based on an estimate, a preliminary estimate from the CPE. So we are scheduled to receive about $5.9 million from our performance funding pool for this year. And just another item as a reminder, our KERS subsidy of $3.2 million is going to be reduced 10% a year for probably 5 to 10 years. But we have a reserve in place in our budget that backfills that reduction.
As an aside on the performance funding work group has been meeting since January to think about any potential additions to the formula and the way it works. And so we'll have some tweaks and some shifts. That number will fluctuate over time, which makes it difficult to use performance funding dollars for recurring expenses. So we are having a conversation around how you might solidify some of those to base. But that's a much longer conversation to have. We need at least for the next 6 to 8 months to get that done over the summer.
Another positive note on the revenue side, we took the short-term investment policy. I think we brought that to the board several months ago. We've got that in place. And because we have that short-term policy, investment policy now in place, we were able to budget an additional $3 million in this budget. So that is great news for campus and for our budget. So before I move to expenditures, any questions or comments on the revenue?
Go through that short-term investment policy gain again.
I'm sorry, what?
Go through that $3 million short-term investment policy change that you did.
So the university had never had a short-term investment policy in place. For the most part, most of the investments were really not strategic and not trying to be critical of prior folks here, but there were a lot of investing into CDs, which I think we know really does not produce a whole lot of interest. And we have so much cash that this just puts our cash to work. Rather than having sitting on the sidelines, you actually put your cash to work. And as I say in that second bullet, it protects the principal, it provides liquidity, and it provides investment earnings. We're monitoring this all the time with our financial advisors, and we have a plan in place of how much we invest, making sure we have enough to pay our bills, but we're investing the appropriate amount to produce these earnings.
Well, that seems to me to be an internal performance money that thanks to you and your staff for some of that.
So on the expenditure side, this is what the budget on the expenditure side looks like. So as I focus on tuition on the revenue side, we have to focus on our faculty and staff salaries on the expenditure side. We are a people institution, not unlike all institutions across the country. Most of the expenditure budget is made up of faculty and staff. So you'll see that makes up about 48% of the budget. Student financial aid of about $114 million. Now, remember, that includes not only institutional aid, but also your federal and state aid. Operating of about $40 million, maintenance $17 million, debt service $17 million, utilities about $10 million to run this campus, and travel of about $7.2 million. So you'll see the personnel budget, the change for faculty and staff is primarily that 2% salary pool that we've put into place. So the decline in the student and graduate assistants, I want to make sure that everyone's clear. This isn't like we're actually hiring less students or less graduate assistants. It simply means that the deans are now, with the Axiom budgeting tool, they're actually able to see their budget better. And so what their budget managers and the deans are actually budgeting closer to actual. So that's all that change is. And you'll see these are the current fringe benefit rates. The big one there that really pops off the chart is the KERS contribution of 85%. That's just really incredible. The good news is that new employees coming in under the KERS goes back to more of a normal level of around 10%. Health insurance, that again is the current contribution annually. Those decisions on what that's going to look like for the next calendar year will be made probably in the fall. Financial aid, if you remember back probably my first budget, probably about 4 years ago, we implemented the new financial aid model. So this is the fourth year of that. So that means the freshmen that received that scholarship, they have now worked through the pipeline. So, this is the third year for the WKU Family Hilltop Guarantee and Border State Scholarship. Overall, there was a $5 million increase in the budget for financial aid. But because we've got all classes now moved through the new financial aid model, we will not see these significant increases again. But I will let Dr. Caboni or Ethan speak to the financial aid here.
Yeah, so as we approach the fourth and final year of the cycle, we're committed to take a critical look at what we've accomplished, and I'm pleased that we had growth last year, growth again in the first year class, projected for this year. It's a conservative estimate. We would not have those numbers without the decisions that we made. But looking at tweaks to the model that might increase net tuition revenue, for the past 5 weeks, the deans, the provost, the EVP, along with all of the admission staff, really dug into both goal setting around that first year number and where we'd like to be. We all would like to be closer to 3,000 or at 3,000 than 2,850 or 2,900. But the other part of that conversation is what's our visit structure? What's the financial aid model? Do we tweak that? How do we address not just high achieving students and needy students, but perhaps students in the middle to increase revenue and yield there. We've had five terrific sessions in a row. We're going to spend the next 6 to 8 weeks working on a detailed revision to that and retreat on June 21st with those same folks around the table, really to do the deep dive and then make any adjustments we need to make. But again, all with an eye toward net tuition revenue, the appropriate size, not just of the first year class, but the entire institution, again, as we're moving back up toward 17,000, 18,000, but then also the conversation around how do you continue to shape that class toward an 80% retention rate and an
ever-increasing first-year entering GPA this year, highest in our history, over 3.6. So all those things to come.
And operating expenses, most of the overall decline of about $1.5 million is directly related to the debt service payments going down. The shift that you see operating expenses going down, most of that went into the travel category. Not that we're traveling more on campus, I would say we're probably traveling less. But because the deans and vice presidents can more clearly see their budget through the budgeting tool, that they align their budget closer to actuals. Just quickly, the next steps. As I talked about, the final performance funding distribution will be made in probably mid-June. And so if it changes a lot from what we have budgeted, we'll need to make a budget adjustment after the first of the year. Fine-tuning the budget details, as I talked about. I don't expect a lot, but we do have just some final things to do. This will come to the Regents at the special call meeting in June for your final approval. This then goes to the CPE. Once you approve the tuition rates that we set, those go to the CPE for final approval at their meeting in June. And then we will load the Axiom budget data into our Banner general ledger to start the new year. Okay. So that's all I have for today. West, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you, Susan. That concludes the business of the time.
Thank you, Chair West. And,